Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. I hope that you all are having a fabulous night and ready to get spooky. A special shout out to my channel members and my patrons, especially Sammy Bradford, Matthew Bowers, and Kathy Berkman, and a special shout out to Voltron76 for being such a loyal member, as well as Leslie Johnson. Now, let's get spooky. I don't even know how it happened. It just kind of did. All you should really know is out of five of my friends, I'm the only one that made it out alive. Me and my friends decided to go to our log cabin mansion in the cold and icy mountains of Colorado. Now, don't think that the cabin was ours because it was actually my friend Michael's parents' cabin, not ours. Call us childish, but we decided to go in the middle of winter for even more snow. My car didn't fit more than four people, so Alexis had to drive herself with two more of our friends to the cabin instead of just coming with us in the car that she drove over to my house in. Even though I didn't like it, there was nothing I could do. I mean, I couldn't just make my car magically fit six people. We got to the mountains in about 2.5 hours after I began driving. Now, despite what people may think, the mountains do have some places to stay warm inside so you don't freeze to death. I never thought I'd have to use one of them, but after about an hour of waiting for Alexis to respond to my texts, asking her what is taking her so long, me and my friends went inside the bus stop, just looking around and looking at things, and immediately brought with warmth. Alexis finally showed up about 20 minutes after we all went in, and I asked her what had happened and why she didn't respond to my texts. "Sorry, Belle. I forgot my phone was at your house and I had to turn back to get it." "Okay, so how come when you got your phone you didn't see my texts, hmm?" "Well, when I got my phone, I was in such a hurry to get back that I didn't even take a second to check it. I just took it and ran back to my car." I felt like crap for scolding her for something that made sense, but I mean, could you blame me? "Let's just get to the cabin, guys," Blake said. "Yeah," Levi said. "Yeah, I guess we should," I agreed with them. On our hike back to the cabin, Jessica realized that she left her purse back in the bus stop looking place, and Blake said that he'd help her to go back to get the bag. We all made kissy faces, and I even think that Levi said, "You can get her, buddy." We all knew that Blake liked Jessica, though. He tried to say that he didn't love her, and while we were doing what we did, Blake said he was just kind of saying, "Yeah, yeah," while he walked Jessica to the area where we were all sure they would kiss. We kept hiking and saw some weird signs saying stuff like, "The Lord shall bless this cursed place," and "They are waiting," and "Lord save our souls." Now, I get that some people who are religious try to spread the word of God or whatever, but I felt like this was a bit much, right? We all just kind of groaned in annoyance as more signs like the first two kept popping up. "Who the hell took the time to put all these signs up?" Levi said. To be honest, I was wondering the same thing. Like, who would take time out of their day to put up these dumb signs to spread the word of God? Looking back on the trip, we should have just turned around and walked back to the car. We were nearly to the cabin when I saw a figure behind us. Jessica and Blake. "Hey guys," I called out to them. "Had fun?" Levi asked them while kissing in the air. Like before, both Jessica and Blake ignored Levi and just groaned in half-hearted, "Hello," when they got closer to him. Blake seemed fine, but something about Jessica seemed worried. "Can we go to the cabin now?" Jessica said. "Like, right now." Sure, Levi and I said at the same time. I felt like I should have asked her what was wrong, but deep down, I knew that even if I asked her, she wouldn't have told me anything that had happened. We finally reached the door of the cabin, took a deep breath, and entered it. It was beautiful inside. How Michael's parents afforded this, I have no idea. "Holy crap, guys," Alexis said. "Holy crap," Michael says. The inside of this cabin had one of those bearskin rugs, beautiful cabin-looking chandeliers, two stories, beautiful couches and pillows, and even a 24-inch flat-screen TV. Words can't describe how I felt as I entered the cabin. Jessica and Blake say that they were going to explore the cabin while Alexis takes a shower. Michael goes off and does whatever Michael does, and Levi says that he's going to go check it out and see what room he wants to sleep in. Now it's just me and Peyton. Peyton was always an odd girl, so she said that she would explore the basement. The frickin' basement, out of all things. I just kinda joked and told her to have fun in the basement. No, it was just me. I didn't really know what to do, so I just decided to watch some TV. I was about halfway through the newest episode of Friends when I hear Peyton call for us from downstairs.
Guys, you should check this out, she says.
I go to my other friends and we head downstairs. Peyton was already waiting for us when we were heading down the steps and saying to just follow her. What happened? And why do you want us? Is what we kept asking. But whatever we did, she just raised her hand and said to follow. When we finally reached the opened window, she said, "This is what you needed to see." "You wanted us to see a window that's open?" Levi said. "How do you know open windows were my favorite?" Blake says. "Michael's parents most likely forgot to close the window when they left," I tell her. "No, no," she says. "When I was checking out the base..." She's cut off by Levi. "You wanted to check out the basement of all places?" he says. She groans and continues. "When I was checking out the basement, I came here first because I thought I saw something move in the corner of my eye. When I came here, the window was open and I shut it close. I began to walk around about 8 minutes later and I hear something open. The window. I ran over here hoping it wasn't the window opening, but it was," she finished. "Maybe you didn't shut it hard enough," Alexis said. "I know I shut it closed," Peyton yells. "Fine, we believe you," I tell her. "I'm scared that someone has broken into the cabin, and my eyes weren't playing tricks on me. When I saw that thing in the corner of my eye..." "Maybe, just maybe, if we had taken that seriously, we could have all prevented what happened next." We all headed upstairs to resume our tasks. Alexis says that she wants to get some fresh air before heading to bed and goes outside. We all just kind of go, and continue doing whatever we were doing. After about a half an hour, I began to worry if Alexis is okay. I tell Peyton and Levi, and they also say that they've begun to worry too. We decide that we should go out and see if she's okay. We leave the cabin and begin to call out for her. When she doesn't answer around the eighth time, we began to really worry.
"Belle, I'm hurt. Please help me."
I hear my mom's voice in the forest. I nearly ran when I realized that the pitch of her voice was different. It wasn't like "I'm in pain" pitch. More like different than that.
"I fell onto some rocks and now I'm really hurt, Belle, please."
I continued to hear. "Do you guys hear my sister asking for help?" Levi asks. "No. Do you hear my mom?" I asked them. "No," they both responded. I began to get anxious. "It doesn't exactly sound like my sister, though. It sounds different, lower pitched," Levi says. "I hear my mom asking for help. I have to go," I tell them, "because my mom sounds like she's on the verge of death." "Is your mom's voice pitched differently?" Levi and Peyton ask. "Yeah," I respond. "I've heard rumors that wendigos stay in snowy, mountainy areas like Colorado," Peyton says. "Wendigos don't exist, Peyton," Levi says. "Yeah, that's probably just some stupid story some parent made up to scare children into not doing anything dangerous like hiking," I tell her. "You guys know I believe in the wendigos," she said. I'm leaving," she tells us. "What do you mean you're leaving?" We still need to find Alexis, I tell her. If Wendigos do haunt this area, Alexis is frickin' dead, guys, she yells at me. You're just thinking of saving your ass, Levi says. So what if I want to live my life and not die? That's my choice, she yells right back. She begins to storm off. Me and Levi agree that she's trying to save her own skin and doesn't care whether or not Alexis died. I notice something that looks like it's feasting on a dead carcass. I look a little bit closer in disgust and realize that it's not a carcass. It's a corpse. And more than that, it's the corpse of Alexis. Tears silently stream down my face like when raindrops slide down your window. I tell Levi that we have to run back to the cabin. He asks me why, and when I tell him, we try to be as quiet as we can, but while still running to the cabin. Levi accidentally trips on a twig, and the sound of the twig snapping notifies the creature. And when it looks at us, I can see its sickly white antlers and weird skull it seems to be wearing. The skull looks like one of those cow skulls they always would use in the Wild West theme movies. It lets out a blood-curdling scream and begins to run at us with unnatural speed. That's when I realized what it was. Peyton was right, and I was about to be a dead person for this Wendigo to go feast on me. I help Levi up and we continue to run. Levi slowed down due to him hurting his leg when he tripped. I saw the life leave his eyes as he realized he had no hope of surviving. Not a string of hope to even look for to hold on to. Nothing. He began to cry, tears streaming down his face, and just fell to his knees. I always heard stories about how it feels to see someone lose all hope. I would have never felt it would look like this. He just looked at me and just gave up. He had nothing to hold on to, nothing to look for, nothing to think about except his death. I saw the Wendigo jump onto Levi and kill him. In Levi's last moments alive, I saw his eyes go from an amazing green to a lifeless white. I wish I could have been able to help Levi, but I couldn't. I made it back to the cabin, and when I entered it, I felt a little of no hope when I remembered that there was someone else in the cabin with us. When it hit me, when I entered into the cabin, everyone was downstairs except for Peyton. With my nose stuffy, I asked them where Peyton was. They said that she thought that she was with me, and that she hadn't been back since she left with us. I tried to wipe my tears away because I didn't want them to know that Levi had died a horrible and brutal death. What happened to you? And where's Levi? Michael asks. He's dead, I say between trembling breaths. He's what? They all ask. Dead, I said again. What? How? Blake asks. I don't think I mentioned this, but Blake was Levi's brother, so to lose Levi must have hurt the most for Blake than it did for any of us. We were walking back and he tripped and hit his head on a boulder. I lied to them. I didn't want to tell them what actually happened, as they probably wouldn't believe me and it would be too gruesome to hear. Blake tells us that he needs a minute alone and goes to his room. Jessica follows him to comfort him, and Michael says he needs to think. I begin to hear knocks coming from the basement. It's my brother's voice now.
It's so cold down here, Belle.
The creature lies. It wasn't a human that entered the cabin. Actually, it was far from it. It was a Wendigo, and it's hungry.
Please open the door.
It continues to lie. I hear glass breaking from the second floor. I run upstairs and nearly open Blake's door when I hear a freshly high-pitched scream. Jessica! It was Jessica's scream. I open the door and the first thing I notice is the broken glass on the floor. When I turn to see Blake being eaten, that dang Wendigo in the basement was a distraction. I run and try to tell Michael that there's something in the cabin and we book it. I hear Jessica scream again, but this time, her scream fades out. She's dead. Now it's just me and Michael. I told him to run as fast as he could and that we should just leave his crap and head to the car. Even though it was in the snow, we ran for our frickin' lives. I saw a Wendigo look at me in the forest, if it's even possible. I could have sworn I saw it wink at me. I looked back behind me, and the Wendigo was gone. Me and Michael finally made it to our car and went in. I tried to start the car, but it wasn't budging. That's when I saw it. The same Wendigo that I saw before. But this time, when it disappeared, I suddenly heard a bang on the top of my car. I tried to start the car as fast as I could, and right before it started, the Wendigo broke the glass next to Michael and tried to grab him. He kept dodging, but the Wendigo figured out his pattern and threw him out of the car. The Wendigo then started to feast on Michael as the life in him died. As the life in him died, just as it had died in Levi, same terror, same realization, same transition from his eye color to white. The Wendigo looked at me before it stopped feasting and waved. I drove as fast as I could out of that place. All those signs about God made sense now. They were warnings to leave this horrible place. We just didn't care at those warnings and scuffed at them. I made it back to my house and locked all the doors. It's been 19 years, and I still can't get those horrific images out of my head. Images of Levi's life being drained away. Images of Jessica screaming to no avail. There's something I didn't mention. When I got home later into the night, I saw something on the roads. It waved at me, then disappeared. Nothing else has happened since that night, but I am never going back to that cabin. The cops suspected me as the murderer of my friends, but no evidence ever came up, as there was no bodies or fingerprints. Please, for dear God, don't ignore the signs in the mountains of Colorado. Me and my friends did, and I guess it's a lesson to others not to do the same.